Yeah, so just a couple of things. One is the Shir tonight is sponsored by Joyce Boehm in memory of her father, Usher Zelig ben Moshe Yosef. So if my father's listening, I remember the Boehms when they davened in our shul, when they davened in the Young Israel. All those. Additionally, the Shir is in memory of Shai ben Anat Yitzchak. He's a young man who died very suddenly this week. He was very close to one of my sons, so I told him that we would learn in his memory as well. And a refuah shlema for a very young child, Daniel Rafael ben Leah, b'toch kol Klal Yisrael, that everyone should have a refuah shlema. Good. Okay, so let's begin. We are in Parshat Bo. We are towards the end, which means in terms of the whole Paro interaction, we're getting to the end, and that's really quite important. So we're going to start really from the beginning. Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Bo el Paro, ki ani hichbadti et libo v'lev avadav, and so on. So again, we're told, and some of this stuff really sounds so repetitive because it's like we've heard this point before. This was said before, the hardening of the heart and so on, which we discuss. But Pasuk Bet is what I want you to pay attention to. Ulaman tiseper ba'oznei bincha uven bincha et asher talalti b'mitzrayim v'et ototai asher samti bam v'yadatam k'ini Hashem. So the truth is that something really dramatic just now took place in that, verse, or even half of that verse, even though the whole thing's important. Leman tisaper ba'aznei bincha uvincha asher hitalalti b'mitzrayim. That there's a reason that all of this is taking place, and that is in order for you to have a really good story to tell over to your children and to your grandchildren. And just like that, the reality of what is taking place has been revealed, which means the whole time we thought this was about leaving Egypt. And that's one of the things that I stressed in the last couple of weeks. It's not about leaving Egypt. Because in order to leave Egypt, God could have done this in so many ways, in so many elegant ways, in so many ways that we barely would have even have noticed, that God tells, okay, it's time to leave, and we leave. And that's it. There really should be, it really should be quite simple. But God just now told us that there's another part to the story, which means in reality, there is a different point of focus than we were aware of, or that we even had thought about, or that had possibly occurred to us, and that is our children, and not just our children, our grandchildren. Which is, if you really take that verse literally and seriously, then we were just now told that the real thing which is going on, or maybe put it this way, who's the audience? I feel in a certain sense that there's a multiple audience. One who I don't want to forget about is Avraham Avinu. And there's a Gemara that says that Avraham Avinu, and I said this in my very short clip in the YouTube I made, that Avraham Avinu, God promised him certain things, and God has to keep that promise. So Avraham Avinu, as far as the Gemara is concerned, is watching. Are we really going to leave Rechush Gadol? Are we really going to go? So there is a way that we leave, but that's not the main focus. Yes, it's important that there's a covenant that has to be kept, but that's not the main focus. The main focus, we were just now told that all this is taking place, is because of the children and the grandchildren. So essentially, God is telling us that he took us out of Egypt in order that we can have something really interesting to say by the Seder. And you all thought it was the other way around. We have a Seder in order to commemorate that God took us out of Egypt. And the Pasuk just now told us the complete opposite. And this issue in terms of having this relationship with our children, our grandchildren, is something which I don't want you to ignore or not pay attention to. One of the things that, again, going back to Bereshit, that we should note is when we look at the relationship between Noach and his children, we find virtually no communication whatsoever. I know at the very end of the flood, we have an unfortunate incident, and then he curses one of his kids, and he says something about the others, but as far as a relationship, we don't see that one. I mean, for that matter, we don't find Noah forging any relationships. the relationship of Yaakov and his children, which, by the way, despite the mistakes and despite the problems, Yaakov won't let that relationship end. That's something which is really quite important. Over here, we're being told that there is an audience, and that audience is towards the future. Once you realize this, then this week's parsha will then make sense. Let me explain to you what I mean by this. One of the things that happens in the parsha is something which is really awkward, and that is we shift. There is really a sudden shift. We move from talking about narrative or having a narrative or from the narrative, and the narrative began really at the very beginning of Shemot and all the way through, and suddenly in Perek Yudbet, we are introduced to laws. We're introduced to things you do and things you don't do, and matzah and mar, chametz, and all kinds of other things are suddenly introduced, the law of the Bechor, and so on. And we must be, you know, asking ourselves, hold it, how did we get here? Meaning, why and where are all these laws being introduced? Now, one thing about the laws, even if we were to have been aware of it, then we would have anticipated, perhaps, that the laws themselves should have probably have been introduced much later on, only when we stand at Mount Sinai, which means anything which is taught before Mount Sinai has to have a big question mark to it. I mean, the Rambam is really quite extreme on this in his commentary to the Mishnah when he speaks about Gid HaNasha, and he says, oh, Gid HaNasha is not because of the story that took place with Yaakov. That's just a story. The reason that the Jews keep Gid HaNasha is because God commanded it to Moshe, and he uses that as the principle by all laws. God commanded it to Moshe. And you know he wants to say at Sinai, which means at Sinai we get the laws, and that becomes so interesting that we have these whole bunch of laws which are introduced beforehand, and that's really the shift, which means the shift took place from narrative, and again, let's just be honest, as far as teaching goes, or saying a Dvar Torah, it is much easier to give a Dvar Torah about narrative, about a story, than it is about laws, and why in the world did God decide to ruin this parsha, and then to throw in all of these verses about laws along the way? Well, the laws are really quite important, and if we actually look at them, we'll realize, again, it's very easy to lose focus, and it's very easy to get lost along the way in all kinds of details, but I think that there is a really simple focus to all of this, but I don't want to get ahead of myself yet. I do want to point out, first going back to Paro, because this really set the stage for a couple of things that are going to take place. One which is important is Pasuk Zion, which you will then realize is the beginning of the unraveling of Egypt, when it says, Vayomu Avdei Paro. And again, here we're not talking about his advisors, we're not talking about his family. Avdei Paro, the servants, they're sweeping up, they're doing the windows, they're folding the laundry, and they turn around to Paro. Va'avdei Paro say alav, Ad matai yeze lanu l'mokeh, shlach et ha'anashim, v'yavdu et Hashem Elok. Don't you know you've lost? I mean, can you imagine this? That Paro, a self-styled God, is able to be told by his servants. It's just over. And that seems to make more of an impact than anything else. But you shove at Moshe bet Aaron al Paro. And at that point, when they speak to him, and by the way, sometimes a person who's no threat to you can give you really good advice because maybe there's much less ego on the line. Maybe that's why bartenders and cab drivers do such a good job. And some people who maybe should be more qualified, maybe they're not, should be more qualified, we don't necessarily listen to. But over here, these servants say, and Paro immediately obeys. And he calls Moshe and Aaron back. Vayomer lahem, lechu, go. Which, by the way, at this point, the whole story should be over. Lechu, ivdu et Hashem elokeichem, go, serve your God. Mi v'mi ha'hochim. There's just one thing I want to know, who's going? V'yom Moshe, and Moshe says, bina areinu, and by the way, just stop right there. Bina areinu, that's important. Our young are going. V'zkeneinu nelech, our elderly are going. V'voneinu, v'noteinu, b'tzoneinu. By the way, it's really interesting. Essentially, he's telling, and I know that what all of us are thinking when we read this, we're thinking, well, of course everyone's going because we're just fooling Paro into letting us out anyway, which itself is something interesting and needs to be dealt with. But don't lose focus over here. Paro had an expectation. Paro's expectation is that only certain people are involved in the ritual in the service of their god or gods, in Paro's sense, and that only will be adult males. There's no reason for women to go, and there's certainly no reason for children to go, and there's certainly no reason for daughters to go. The only people to be going is you. What do you mean? Mivim me olech. And when Moshe says, "Bina areinu, our young was kenu, our old." This is all the things that we need for the holiday. We need the people to celebrate. We need the things that we're going to offer. And we're going to have a Korban Chagiga. We're going to have a Korban Pesach. And it's time to celebrate. And how in the world do we celebrate Pesach? We celebrate Pesach. The young and the old, the elderly, you know, the grandparents or the great-grandparents and the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren. We're all there together. That's how we celebrate Pesach. Which means essentially what Moshe is saying right now is that that's how we celebrate. And this is a deal breaker for Paro. Paro says, oh, of course not. And by the time we get to Pasuk Yud Aleph, he writes, Lo chen luchuna hagvarim vivdu et Hashem. Ki otat hem evakshim. Which means, what are you talking about, Paro says. It's not about the children. It's about who serves God. It is the men. So now if you want on top of everything else, you can now accuse Paro of being sexist and being guilty of... By the way, that could be the only thing that would bother some people. He's sexist, and he is disinterested or doesn't even begin to understand how children could be involved. And again, I want to stress, L'man tisaper ba'aznei bincha uven bincha. This point that Paro only thinks that the elderly males should go, I mean, that's what's noticed over here by the various commentaries, the Ramban in the source too. He wanted a specific list of who's going. The boys and the girls. See, it's interesting also, because Paro is saying, no, that's not the way to do it. Azchara leParo ala banim vaabanot. Vasher shelo yishlach hataf b'shum panim. I mean, what in the world do children need to sit around by the Pesach table? Again, I'm saying it like this. We all understand exactly what they need to, but that's exactly the difference in the breakdown. And when Paro says, you know, what are you talking about? I just want to remind you of something. How in the world can Paro claim to know how we're supposed to serve God? Don't we remember what Paro said all the way back in Parakeh when Moshe says that God said, you know, let my people go? Let my people go. They can serve God. Who's this God? I don't know him. So, by the way, Paro, you don't know him. You don't know the rules. You don't know what's expected. You don't know what God asked. And you don't know exactly how it is that we serve. So what Paro is actually doing, of course, is he's projecting his own sensibilities in terms of what is service of a god or how one serves a god, and he is projecting that on the Jews, and he says, no, that's how you serve. And the truth is that Moshe says, well, that's not exactly the case. So the way the Al-Sheikh puts it is that he wanted to leave the children and the women behind as a mashkon. I forgot how you say a mashkon in English, as collateral. To make sure that that you'll be coming back. It's that he doesn't really trust them over here. And again, why does this have to be the way that we leave is an important question. But I'm ignoring that right now because there is something else which is, as I'm saying, is far more interesting. And once you realize that it's all about the children, you then realize that obviously what we're told in source number 7 has to be the follow-up to all this. Vayomar Hashem Moshe, O nega achad avil paro ha-mitzrayim, I'm bringing one more plague. Now, we happen to know what this plague is. And it's interesting that in the middle, we have this issue, this accounting issue, that, you know, you need to go and bother the things because essentially God is saying, and again, this is the way the Gemara reads it, you know, listen, I have a deal with Avraham, and, you know, I can't really face Avraham unless you go and do what I'm asking. Daberel, meaning, you're about to go. I just want to read the verses what I think is the correct way. But Yomar Shema Moshe, Od Nega Achad Avil Parova Mitzrayim Acharecha Nishlachet Chamize, which means this is it. This is the final point, and they're leaving now. Now you're leaving. Because you're leaving now, we get to Pasuk Bet. So make sure you do this, because I have a deal with Avram. Daberna ba'aznayam, v'yishlu ish me'et re'ehu, v'yisha me'et re'uta, kli kesef v'kli zahav. Go and borrow these things or take these things. And that has to do with that second point, because now you're leaving. But as far as that first point, od nega achad, there's one more plague which is going to come, v'yiten Hashem etchei na'am, and again, that's continuation of Pasuk Bet, which is the second part of Pasuk Aleph. You know it's going to do it. Gama ish Moshe gadol ma'od be'eretz Mitzrayim be'enei avdei paro uvnei ha'am, which is fascinating, which means that Moshe's charisma is perceived by everybody. Rabbi Soloveitchik made this point, you know, along the way here, why doesn't Paro just kill him? You know, he walks in the palace, let my people go, and say, who are you, you rabble-rouser, you troublemaker, and just kill him on the spot. And he says he couldn't. That among all the other things that are being played out here is that Moshe's charisma absolutely enchanted Paro. And Paro just can't do anything, but it's not just Paro who's enchanted. Everyone's enchanted by Moshe because there are so many interesting things what's taking place over here. But then we get to Pasuk Daled. And it's also quite interesting how in the world Moshe is able to get away with saying this. Vayomer Moshe, Kol Amar Hashem. This is the Od Nega. This now is the Od Nega. Vayomer Moshe, Kol Amar Hashem, Ki Chatzot HaLayla Ani Yotzei B'toch Mitzrayim. Also notice, this is different from the first nine plagues. First nine plagues, God, he subcontracts them. Moshe, Aaron are the ones who facilitate them. Over here, it's God. This is actually what we mean when the pasuk that we cite in Agada, Ani v'lo malach, right? Ani v'lo shaliach. It sounds a little funny. What are you talking about? There was a malach, as it were, Moshe. There was a shaliach all along the way. Moshe and Aaron were facilitating. No. It's the plague that actually gets them out of Egypt. There's only one of those, and that's the 10th one. That plague, God does himself. And that's right now. And God says, Ani yotzei b'toch Mitzrayim. Now this is now is going to be the, if you want, as the showdown. It's not high noon, but it's going to be at midnight. Umet kol b'chor be'eretz Mitzrayim. Mi b'chor paro, and you have to stop and pay attention now. It's about the children, which means the children of Israel need permission to leave, and you're not letting the children leave. So guess what's going to happen? You're going to lose your children. Now, by the way, that may sound very familiar to some of you, because you know there's a verse which is similar to that. We'll come back to that. But meanwhile, make kol b'chor eretz Mitzrayim, be b'chor paro hu yoshev al kiso, ad b'chor shevcha asher al rechayim, v'chol b'chor behema. If you are not going to allow the children to go, because he already let the adults go, if you're not going to let the children go, there's going to be a severe price you're going to pay for this. You're going to lose your children. V'aitat tzaka gdola b'chol eretz Mitzrayim asher kamo lo yenta v'kamo lo tosif. Again, that they should know. All this Moshe is saying, and you have to ask yourself a question, how in the world do the Egyptians let him get away with this? How is Moshe able to say this? And there's actually a remarkable midrash that I want to share with you. I'm not telling you that the midrash is pshat, but I think it encapsulates the feeling of what's going on. You know, especially if we just go back and look at all the pieces right now. If we just think about this ourselves for a moment. Till now, Moshe's been 9 for 9. And I will note that there has not been a warning before every single one. But it's essentially Moshe's 9 for 9. What Moshe says happens. When Moshe says this is going to happen to you, it happens. You have Dam and you have Tzardeh and you have Kinim and on and on and on. So at this point when he says the firstborn is going to die, and put this together what we just now saw before, the people, the servants, the slaves, the Egyptians, and everybody is enchanted with Moshe, and they know that this is going to happen. So how in the world do the firstborn allow this just to play itself out when they know that if Moshe said this, then this is what's really going to happen? So I'm going to say it again. There must be more to this story right here than we're being told in the text. And that's what's picked up, and I'll say it again, by the Midrash. I'm not asking you to take the Midrash literally. You know, sometimes the Midrash fills in space and tells us, you know, what happened. Sometimes the Midrash fills in and tells us a feeling, tells us what's experienced. And part of our problem is that, and I'll say our education, is we then take it literally, or we don't take it literally. We say, oh, no, that can't be true. But it's a different level of truth. The truth is what it's expressing is emotional truth. You know, one example which I absolutely love, and if you've never heard me say this, I'll say it again now, and that is there's this wonderful Targum Yonatan, which is found in Parshat Yitro. And it says, I took you out on the wings of eagles. And the Targum there says, I took you out on the wings of eagles. I took you to Eretz Yisrael. You did the Korban Pesach in Jerusalem. And then I took you back to Egypt. And then we continued the whole story. You say, what are you talking about? That never happened. But of course that happened. Because what is Pesach supposed to be other than a Jew feeling as if he's serving God in a built Jerusalem? So we do that looking backwards. It's as if, you know, and that's the whole thing about Pesach. And every generation we have to see is if we left Egypt. Yes, we left Egypt, and we end up in Jerusalem, and we serve God in Jerusalem, in a built Beit HaMikdash, which means that Midrash, which the Targum is citing, absolutely identifies an emotional truth of what took place that night, what it really means to feel free. You know what freedom is like? Freedom is if you're sitting in Jerusalem, you're not locked up in a house someplace. You're in Jerusalem and you're free and you're in the Beit HaMikdash and you're serving God as a free person. That's what they experienced that night. Now, again, it doesn't mean literally that's what happened, but I'm saying that's what we need to do when we read the Midrashim. So this Midrash is fascinating because it tells us about how the Egyptians feel. And I'll say it again, I'm not asking you to take it literally. I'm only asking you to take it seriously. And it's based upon a pasuk which we all know. Limakeh, source 8, Limakeh Mitzrayim bivchareihem kilam chasto. One of the things that we are forever beholden to God is that he struck down Limakeh Mitzrayim, he struck Egypt bivchareihem through their firstborn. Now, literally, the way to read that verse is you struck the Egyptians by virtue of striking their firstborn. Although, maybe you can read it a different way. Maybe you can read it. Well, let me read the Midrash, and then we'll figure out how to read it. Umet kol b'chor. Nitkansu kol b'chorot etzel avoteyam. Amr lehem. All the firstborns then went in front of their fathers and said to them, kol mashama Moshe hevi aleinu. You know, everything that Moshe says actually comes true. Ein etem mevakshim shenichye? Don't you want us to live? Elobovu notzi. And there's two texts here, either the Avadim or Ivrim, come, let them go. Halalu mi beinenu. Let them get out of here. Let them leave already. The imlav, if not, hare anu meitim. We are going to die. Which means Moshe says this out loud. It makes the front pages of the newspapers afterwards. Everyone knows that Moshe just now threatened Paro that all the firstborn are going to die. And how are the firstborn supposed to take this? Do they supposed to take this? Oh, that's really interesting. You know, we support Paro under all and every circumstances. No, they turn to their fathers and say, we're going to die. Heshivu otam. The father said back to them, v'amulahem, afilu kol hamitzrim metim enim yotzim mikan. Even if every Egyptian dies, we're not letting the Jews out, or like the Hebrews out, essentially over our dead bodies. Now, I'm going to tell you what I really hear in this Midrash, because again, I told you, it's not just about what it literally says, it's about what it's telling us. It's telling us that we, as Jews, need to invest in our children, and it's telling us, in contrast, that the Egyptians, the Bnei Cham, which is itself is interesting, where they all come back to, that there is not this same type of investment. You know, one of the favorite complaints, I don't know, I'm an expatriate, so I don't know how to call them, the Jews that are back in America that they love to complain about is the tuition, the school tuition, yeshiva tuition. And if not, and once you pay attention to tuition, they'll tell you about summer camps. And once you get past summer camps, it's how much money you have to spend on the bar mitzvah or the bat mitzvah. And for that matter, the wedding, and we keep going down the line. But they complain, but they do it, which is actually really interesting. And they do it, a lot of people do it without complaining. They do it because, of course, this is what we do. We invest in our children. That's what we do. If our children are going to be more successful because, and again, go to yeshiva, and it's not just yeshiva, it's college and it's other things. We invest in our children. That's what we do. And that's what the Midrash is telling us over here. It's saying is that the Egyptian fathers are listening to their sons who are saying, we're going to die. And they say, that's not the point, you're going to die. Can you please pay attention to the issue over here? We can't let go of our slaves. If we let go of our slaves, what kind of lives are we going to have? And they're saying, but we're going to die. So this whole back and forth, which again, I'm telling you, is largely imaginary, but it's not. It's imaginary because we have no reason to believe this is exactly what took place. But nonetheless, there's something else which is so interesting about the conversation. And what's interesting about the conversation is the background of the verses that I've been trying to point out to you, that these verses are telling us it's about our children. We can't leave and serve God. Forget about this is the way to leave Egypt. But no, when we go to shul, we also go with our children. And certainly when we celebrate Pesach, we celebrate it with our children. This is what we do. And not only do we, by, you know, also have the children, if you begin to think about it, you realize that they're not just people who happen to also be around the table. What in the world is Pesach if not this investment in educating future generations? I mean, that's exactly what this is all about. And if you realize that that is the end game, right? When I say the end game, I'm saying 1,000 and 2,000 years later, 2,500 years later, when you say, okay, what's Pesach? Well, Pesach, our job, all of us, are to be educators and to teach the values and teach the laws and teach the ideas to our children. And the greatest success that we have is when they then become teachers and teach it in turn to their children. That is what success is. And we've been very, very successful. When I wrote the book together with Senator Joe Lieberman on the idea of between Pesach and Shavuot, one of the things that at the Pesach Seder is in the history of the world, the longest running educational program. That's what it is. Of course, we know the secrets. The secret is have wine, and the secret is have food, and the secret is have a good story to tell. And, you know, you got all the props over there, but it's a story that we've been telling for a long time. But just realize, if the whole thing about Pesach night is to tell a story to our children and our grandchildren, don't you realize that that is an essential part of leaving Egypt itself, is about the children? And that was just now revealed. And as much as we thought, no, it's this struggle between us and Paro, God and Paro, the Jews and Paro, the Jews and the Egyptians, no, that's not what it's about. It's that here is a way, a vehicle, to educate our children and teach them values which God wanted us to have and teach over to them. And if you don't realize that the children are it's not a side part. It is the main focus of what's going on. And that was not revealed to the beginning of Parshat Bo, when he says, oh, this is in order to tell your children. No, but that was it. And then this contrast begins. Okay, we're going to tell our children, and Paro is not invested in his children, and the Egyptians are not invested in their children. And that's why that midrash is so powerful, when the children turn back and say to Paro, please do something, we're going to die. And then the response of the imagined response is, that's not the issue, that you're going to die. This is not about you. This is about us holding on to our slaves. Now just think about the difference now. Judaism is going to be teaching our children on Pesach night for years and years and years how to be sensitive to the disenfranchised. You know, as much as some of you like quote-unquote social justice and some of you don't like it, it is a beautiful aspect of Judaism where certain Jews will focus on values which are Torah-inspired values. Again, I'm being very careful how I'm saying it. Torah-inspired values, and these, I think, come because we've been having Pesach Seders for so long and teaching people that you can't take advantage of people. You need to be kind to people. How many times in the Torah does it speak about values? Because you were slaves in Egypt, so you need to do things differently. And then you have this, again, imagined midrash where the Egyptian fathers are saying, this is not about you, it's about holding on to slaves. I mean, what a contrast between what we're trying to teach on Pesach night and the message which they are getting, again, according to this midrash. And part of my point is, even if this midrash is not how things happened, there is a great deal of truth in it. It's a great deal of truth because, again, aside from everything else, I think that's a great point. They've been 9 for 9. He's going to be 10 for 10. It's going to happen. There's going to be Makat Bechorot. And how in the world could there be such a lack of response and a lack of caring on the other side? So forget, you know, about the slaves. How can this happen? So I'm saying this Midrash Tanchuna, I think, is really phenomenal. I just want to continue with it because it goes a little bit further. Forget about it. They can all die. All Egyptians die. We're going down with the ship. We're not letting anybody go. Masu, what do they do? Nitkansu kol b'charot v'hu lahem etzel paro. They all went to Paro. V'hu mitzavchim al Paro. And they started, there was a protest by the palace. And they all started screaming, v'omrim lo, b'vakasha mimcha, hotzia amaze, shebishvilam hara tavo. Aleinu v'alecha, because of you, this evil will come upon us. Omar lehem avodav tzu v'kibchu shokeim shel elu. You know, lock them up, tie them up. Ma asu ha-becharot, miyad yatsu, the becharot went out. V'natal kol achad v'hem, mehem cherev. Each one took a sword. V'harag aviv. And each one then went and killed their own father. Shenemar limaka mitzrayim bivchareim. That you struck Egypt through their firstborn. Which we always understood that to mean that you struck Egypt by killing the firstborn. And this is, no, you struck Egypt by the firstborn because the firstborn ended up rebelling against the fathers and against Paro. And again, this is just the beginning of the falling apart of Egypt. So again, I'll say I find this Midrash to be absolutely fascinating and containing, again, a great deal of truth. There's another version of it. Over here it says in Source 10, the Psikta says, Miyad Yatsu B'charot V'Hargu B'Avoteim Shishim Ribo, which of course is a nice biblical number. Then, and this I already hinted at, as we go by and we're presented with the law, of course we're presented with the law, because we're talking about Pesach now, we're talking about the future. We're talking, this is what you need to do now, gather your families together, and that is incredibly important. Again, in Perek Yud Bet, you're going to... V'yiketi kol b'chor, in the one hand, their firstborn are going to be killed. But the other thing which is interesting is, I just want to read a little bit, maybe from Pasuk. Well, Pasuk Gimel tells us every household, or extended household, it's about the family, will gather together. Pasuk Yud Bet. V'varti be'eretz Mitzrayim b'layla hazeh. And I'm going to go through or Egypt on that night. V'yiketi kol b'chor. And I'm going to judge their gods as well. And you're going to put the blood on the doorposts, and I'm going to see the blood. I'm going to pass over. Of course, that's where the word or the name or the holiday comes from, Passover. Now that itself is really important, and I want to pause there for a second, and then we'll continue with Pasuk Yedaled. It's telling us that there is something over here, a susceptibility that we have as well to this plague, and we need to be very, very careful. We need to do this properly. You know, on a certain level, by taking the blood, putting it on the doorpost, that the door, the house, the home, just became a mizbeach. You know, as much as you think about Hanukkah sometimes, that every home has the candles, it becomes like the Beit HaMikdash. On Pesach night, when you take the blood, you put it on the doorpost just became the Mizbeach, because that's what you do with a korban, you put the blood on the Mizbeach. So that itself becomes interesting. But it's the susceptibility which is interesting to me. And I'm going to explain this in a very surprising way. You have to give me a couple of minutes to get there. But I'm going to explain this point about this susceptibility. But first, I want to move on to, you know, to fill out the rest of what's taking place. In Pasuk Yedalit, V'haya hayom hazeh lachem lezikaron. This will become a memory. V'chagotim oto chag l'Hashem lidorotechem. Chukat olam. Again, future. You're going to be doing this in the future, and that's where all the laws are being introduced. It's not about now. This is not just about leaving Egypt. I'll say it again. There are other ways we could have been leaving Egypt, and now all these laws are being introduced. And as the laws are being introduced again, Ushmartem Yom Hazeh L'Dorotechem Chukat Olam in Pasuk Yud Zayin. And it gives us more and more details about matzah and about chametz and so on. And this is what you're going to do. in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Vayikra Moshe L'Kol Zekenei Yisrael V'yomer Lahem Yishkul K'chu Lachem Tzon V'mishpachoteichem. Again, it is all about family and celebrating together. And then Egypt is going to be struck, and they're told all of these laws, and they're told in Pasuk Kaf Hei, V'yoki Tavoa La'aretz, and when you come to the land of Israel, again, that was this other midrash in the Targum Yonatan, that, you know, they're already imagining this now. When you come to the land of Israel, She'itein Hashem lachem, kasher diber, u'shmartim at avodazot, and you're going to do this. V'yoki yomrum aleichem b'neichem, and when your kids ask you about this, or they question you, or they say to you about this, ma'avodazot lachem, what is this? So now this, you all should reckon, this is one of the four sons. So actually, according to tradition, this is the wicked son, which is going to be quite ironic, right? And what do you say? By the way, we don't know the answer. What do you say? Hakat shinav. You hit him and you say, bavor zeh asasha, asashem li, li asav lo asa. It's not the answer here. The answer here is, v'martim zevach pesach hu l'ashem. You tell your kids in the future, this is the Passover offering. Asher pasach al batei b'nei Yisrael. Which is, again, is that point of the susceptibility which exists. That there was a moment of judgment. God passed over our homes because of the Korban Pesach. And the people bowed down. So I'll repeat myself, because someone else said it, I would repeat them, but I've said this in the past. When it says that they bowed down, and Vayikoda Am Vishtachavu, Rashi writes something very surprising. Vayikoda Am Al Besarot HaGeula, because they were just now told that redemption is taking place. Uviyata Aretz, and they were told that they're entering the land. Uvisarat HaBanim Shulem, and they're told about the kids they're going to have. Now that's very funny, because Rashi later on will tell us that this verse applies to the wicked child. If this is the wicked child, why are they happy about that they're going to be getting this wicked child? And the answer is that the wickedness of the child is of no significance right now. They were just now told that they're going to have children, and they're going to leave here, they're going to leave Egypt, they're not going to be slaves, they're going to be free people in their own land. And you know what's going to happen then? Then I'm going to have an educational challenge, and that challenge is going to be to go back and to teach my kid about what it was like when we were slaves. What would you prefer? To teach your kid to have hope in slavery, or teach your kid, listen, we were once slaves, which means, yeah, the kid should know more. He should have had a better education. He should have had a great appreciation. He has no idea what the story is going on. Again, my comparison of this will be if there was a conversation that took place in Auschwitz and somebody comes and says, by the way, you're getting out. You're going to survive. And you're going to go to the land of Israel. And not only are you going to go to the land of Israel, you're going to celebrate leaving Auschwitz every single year, and you're going to have a child or grandchild or great-grandchild who's going to turn around and ask, why in the world are we celebrating this? Yes, that's the wicked child who's asking and doesn't know and is disconnected. So do you realize now what the blessing is? For us, that's a terrible thing, that the child who questions our traditions. Can you imagine, but if you're standing in Auschwitz and you're going to be told you're going to have a grandson who's going to be free? You're going to continue as a people. You're going to live with freedom. Okay, now your challenge is to connect him to his tradition. Wouldn't you rather that challenge than trying to tell him in Auschwitz that you're going to survive and be free? That's essentially what they were just now told, and they are very thankful to God. Thank you. Thank you for this educational opportunity I'm going to have. I'm going to have to teach my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, about our tradition. I accept the challenge. Free people in our country serving God, and I'm going to have to teach them the meaning of this. Yes, we have to teach our children, our grandchildren, meaning of mitzvot. Yes, we have to do that. That's our challenge. We need to do that. We accept that challenge. Give us our land, give us our freedom, and we accept the educational challenge. But don't you realize what's taking place over here? God is essentially laying out for us what this is all about. What this is about is the children, the grandchildren. That is exactly the point. If I have to, you know, overstate this, and of course I do, so that's the next chapter as well. We continue into Perek Yud Gimel, and it talks about more laws, the laws of the Bechor, Kol Bechor, and again it says, Vayoma Moshe Ela Am Zachorta Yom Hazeh She'etzatu Mitzrayim Mibeit Avadim. Don't forget this day that you leave, which means you're going to get to a point in the future that we have to remind you to keep this and to remember that we were once slaves. What a great education, what a great challenge we have. We're going to be free and have to remember that we're free. Yes, that's a challenge. And you're going to tell your kids, you know, what this is all about. And that's the mitzvah Haggadah. And it then continues, and vayaki vachal aretz vayaki shecha bin machar right bin chamachar lemor mazot. And he's going to ask you about this. Yes, we accept these challenges, but don't you realize the whole subtext of this? And by the way, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not the subtext. Maybe it's the text. But the whole subtext to what's going on over here is all about the children, and that's where Parshat Bo began. So in case we're wondering, so what happened? God just revealed to Moshe it's all about the children. So with this whole introduction, I can now go and tell you the last couple of minutes of what I wanted to say, because there's a whole other side to this. It was about the children from the very beginning. All the way back in Perek Aleph and Shemot, we're told that Paro tries to kill our children. And on the one hand, you know, kill them as soon as they're born, or if they don't listen, then throw them into the sea. Which means this attack on Jewish children was the very beginning of the story over here. Which, I'm going to say it again, that we should not be surprised that when we get towards the end of the story, the children are going to be there a part of it as well. Source 17 is the section that I thought that some of you would have been thinking about as I was speaking. Vayomar Hashem Moshe b'Midyan, Lech, Shuv Mitzrayim. Go back. And by the way, that's also remarkable because God sent him on a mission. He went to act to Midyan to say he's going to leave. He got the blessing, but he hasn't left yet. V'yikach Moshe et ishto ve'et banav, which is the first time we're told that he has a second child. We were only informed of a first child. V'yikivim al chamor v'yishov arzim Mitzrayim. V'yikach Moshe matei elokim b'yado. V'yomar Shem el Moshe b'lechtecha l'shuv Mitzrayim. Re'ei kol ha'maftim asher shamti b'adecha. And again, that's one of the reasons we get so confused, because so many times God said this. But now, Vamarte el Paro, Ko Amar Hashem, Bini Bechori Yisrael, Vamar Elecha, Shalachet Bini, Vyavdeni, Vitama'in Lashalcho, Hine Noche Roget Bincha Bechorecha. Which means the 10th plague, which isn't revealed until Parshat Bo, God tells Moshe in the very beginning, just realize, Paro, what's going on. I have children, and it's the children of Israel are my children. Treat them with respect. Treat them in a proper way. Release them. Let them serve me, or you will lose your children. Now, that is fascinating, because we don't know when Moshe relayed this message. Did he relay this in the very first moment? Shalachet dami? Was this one of the first things that were said? We don't know. Was this only said only at the end, Od Nega Achad, I got one more thing. Okay, now Moshe knows exactly what it is because it was said to him first. But what I want you to notice over here, I mean, first of all, if I'll pause for a moment, in Source 18 and 19 and 20, the Bechor Shor, so it's a Rishon, the Sforno, the Maharal in Source 20, all of them understand the same point. Hinei nochi reget bincha, mida kenegen mida. The Maharal is going to tell us that all of the plagues are midah keneged midah. And what's happening over here is, he's saying, there are consequences. But what I want you to note is this issue about children was here from the very beginning. And I now want to explain something which maybe never made any sense to us. In Source 17, we started Pasuk Yutet, you know, go back. Right? It's time to do what you need to do. But tell Paro this, about the Bnei Bechori. And then we get to Pasuk Kaf Dalet, which is really quite difficult. And along the way, they stopped. And God wanted to kill him. That Tzipora then takes something sharp and she performs a Brit Milah on her son. Vatomer, and she says, Ki chatan damiyata li, right? A groom of blood, as it were. Vayiref imenu azam rachatan damim lemulat. And at that point, you know, Moshe is out of the forest, as it were. And then the story continues. Vayom Hashem al Aaron, lech lekrat Moshe amidbara. Vayifkasheu bahar elokim vayishaklo. And the story continues. You know, there is this, like, bizarre story being told in the very middle of a really good story. And as we're looking at it, we just have no idea what's taking place. Years ago, I wrote and then I later found a Chizkuni and also a Rashbam who felt the same thing. I always felt that this story on some level was similar to the story of Yaakov struggling with the angel. There Yaakov is coming back and something ominous happens in the middle of the night and his life is in a precarious situation and will he survive, will he not survive, and you know he has to come back to Israel, and over here Moshe is coming back to perform some mission, and then there is this story in both stories. I'll tell you what exactly it is that I think is similar, that there is, the pshat is clouded in both cases, that you don't really know what's going on. I'm not going to talk more now about Yaakov and the angel, or Yaakov and the Sarah Shel Esav, and so on, or Yaakov and himself, as I've suggested. Leave all that aside. Over here, simple point. Which son was it who was being threatened? Doesn't say which son. So some of the commentaries say one, and some commentaries say it's the other. So I want to point out a Mechilta. Now, Mechilta is really an old source and an authoritative source. And the Mechilta tells us something which is absolutely frightening. But once we understand it, I think we'll be better equipped to understand the end of the story as well. Okay, part of what I'm getting at is that there was foreshadowing in terms of Makat Becharot already over here. Do you remember that I noted that on Pesach night, the original Pesach, we had to put blood on the wall because we were in a precarious situation? Notice right now we have the microcosm of the Makat Becharot at least being expressed, and now we have a microcosm of Moshe being in a precarious situation, and later on all of this is going to be played out by Makat Becharot, but the Jews need to do something with blood to be saved. And now notice, of course, Chatan Damim, that she does take the blood and she performs this circumcision, and then she saves Moshe at this point. So therefore, what's going to happen later, again, if you're not following me right now, this scene by the Malon is a microcosm of Pesach night, where the Jews are going to be in a precarious situation and therefore they need to put the blood on the sign. And now what's the other thing which is really interesting, if somebody needs a Dvar Torah for a Brit, you know, one of the things that we note is that the Brit and the Korban Pesach are the only two mitzvot aseh that lack of doing them causes a punishment of karet. So there is a connection, but now you have a whole nother connection. Then it's solved by the blood of the Korban Pesach, and over here it's solved by the blood of a Brit Milah, but still we don't know which child it is, and that's part of what we need to understand. And I'm going to try to wrap this up in less time rather than more, but let's look at this Mechilta. First, note the following Pasuk, because it's going to be based on this. Pasuk, in Source 21, Moshe meets his wife, gets married, Vayoel Moshe. It's very interesting. The Satmar Rebbe has a sefer by that name, but Yoel Moshe. We'll see why maybe others would not have used that name. Vayoel Moshe l'shevet ta'ish. So what does Vayoel mean? So the way that my English translation, wherever this comes from, wrote that Moshe was content. He was comfortable. Vayoel Moshe l'shevet ta'ish. Vayitein et zippor bito l'moshe. There was a level of comfort. Vatele ben, and he has a child. Vayikrat shmo Gershom, and the name of the child is a name which connotes strangeness. Kiyamar gera yiti be'eretz nochriya. There's a stranger in a strange land. Okay. Later on, we're going to learn in Source 22 that Shnei Baneha, when Sipurah comes back, Hashem ha'echad Gershom, Kiyamar gera yiti be'eretz nochriya, v'shem ha'echad Eliezer, that God helps, ki elokei aviba ezri v'tzlein micherev paro, that he was saved. Okay. So that's interesting. At this point, Zipporah now has come back and went with two kids, but we don't know which one this is. Let's look at the Mechilta now. But Shnei Baneha. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Eretz Nachriya Haita Lo Vadai. Rabbi Lezer Madi Omer, Be'eretz Nachriya. Ama Moshe, Ho'il V'chol Olam Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Ani Avod L'misha Amar V'haya Olam. Everybody worships idolatry, but I'm going to worship the one true, monotheistic, all-powerful God. Yitro said, on one condition. And I'll give it to you as a wife. What's the deal? Amar lo ben sheyel lechatchila. I want your firstborn son. Yelo vodazara. Yitro is the Kohen Midian. He says, I need. He's got seven daughters. He needs somebody to take over the family business. So he says, I will let you marry my daughter on condition that I get your first son. My first grandson I am taking, and he will become an idolater. From that point onwards, you can do with him as you wish. And Moshe accepted. So all of you who cannot believe the words that you're reading right here, it's not my fault. It's a mechilta. The mechilta writes this. Omar lo hishavali. And Yitro says, swear to me. Vishavalo. He swore to him. Shenemar, and that's what it means, vayoel Moshe. The word vayoel can also be understood as a vow. In Allah, the word Allah, ela lashon shivu'ah. And that's one of the reasons I would personally have not have named a book vayoel Moshe, because according to the Mechilta, it is the vow that Moshe made to give up his kid for idolatry. How's that for a connotation that you may not have wanted to go there? And now listen to the end of the Mechilta. Lefichach, therefore, hikdim ha-malach la-roget Moshe. And that's why the malach wanted to kill Moshe. What in the world did Moshe do that was so bad that he deserved to die? And the answer is, he let go of one of his kids. He didn't take responsibility for his kids. Miyad v'tikach tziporet tzor, that she took this sharp thing, v'tichrot et orlat bana, and therefore she saved him at that particular moment. And by the way, the Targum Yonatan or Sudi Yonatan understands which of the kids was going to be killed. Which kid did she do the Brit Milah on? In source 25, it says, or 26 is even better, where it's in Hebrew. V'keish lo go min ba'avor ger shom benosha lo haya ma'ul al inyan yitro chamav. Shalonatan azav lemolo. It's because he gave him up to Yitro, and Yitro did not want to allow. And again, in the Gemara in source in the Durm follows the same tradition. Bishashin et Rashi Moshe Rabbeinu min hamila. Again, on that source, you can debate which kid it is, but I'll say it again. I find this to be absolutely fascinating. But now, just pay attention to what we hopefully now understand, that Moshe's life was susceptible because he did not invest enough in his children. And by the way, there is a rabbinic tradition cited in the Gemara that Moshe's Gershom later on will have a son who later on will be known Oved Avodah Zarah in the Navi. And that Moshe's lack of investment in him is what caused all of this. Now again, all of this is very frightening to us. On the other hand, to what extent should we be judging Moshe, who's growing up in Midian and marries a Midianite and everything is different and this is the deal and so on? But I think it's a fascinating midrash. But what's more interesting to me, I'm going to say this again to you, please stop taking these things literally. Rather, what we have over here is this beautiful microcosm, which is then going to reflect the macrocosm. The microcosm is that if the Egyptians are going to be killed because of a lack of respect for your children, you need to respect your own children. If the Egyptians are going to be susceptible to something, realize that you're susceptible right then as well. Which means Pesach night, if what I'm saying is correct, and maybe I'm getting carried away, but Pesach night is a time that we were saved. God passed over our homes because we did the Korban Pesach, but it's more than just the Korban. It's because of the main mitzvah of the night. And yes, it's eating the matzah, and it's drinking the four cups, which is a drabanan, and it's eating the morar, which theoretically with the Korban Pesach is deraita. But all of that is for a purpose. And what is the purpose? V'gadata levincha b'yamahu. You tell your children over the story. The night of Pesach is about investing in the children. And if we don't invest in our children, so at that point we become very susceptible. And where do we see that from? Because right after God says to Moshe, to warn Paro that he's going to lose his firstborn unless he lets the Jews go home, my firstborn, and at that moment Moshe becomes susceptible. At that point, again, this magnifying glass comes. Moshe, did you do Brit Milah? And it's much easier for us to say it's the second kid. It's much easier for us to explain, no, it's a second kid. He was just now born. And Moshe didn't know, do I make a Brit? Do I go back? And the Jews need me. I have to go. And he doesn't have time to do a Brit. And he get. So even if you take that approach, it's the second kid. It's Eliezer. It's the second kid. So why is Moshe being attacked? It's about the children. That's what this is all about. It's about continuity. That's what Judaism is. It's continuity. It's investment in our children. It's instilling in our children the values of our grandparents. That's exactly what this is. And that's what Pesach is. And again, I keep coming back to this point. Don't miss what Pesach is about, because that's what it is. That's what's being institutionalized. Those are the laws which are being taught. And then we have this fascinating scene, which I'm going to say it again, and I can read it more than one way. I can read that it's Moshe's newly born child who didn't have a Brit Milah, and it's much easier to say it that way. Or I can read it in the scary way that we're told by the Mechilta, that Moshe makes a deal with the devil, if you will. He makes a deal with Yitro. At the end of the day, now you maybe realize, again, a subtext, why Moshe may work so hard to keep Yitro in the fold. He wants to convert Yitro. He wants to bring Yitro over because he made a deal with Yitro. That Yitro gets to decide how the firstborn son. You know, he should have just made a deal. You get to name the firstborn son. Okay, that's enough. Grandparents shouldn't have more than that right. They shouldn't get to raise them for idolatry. But I'm saying this is a scary, scary mechilta. It's a scary midrash. But what I like about it is I think that you now can see the entire text of Shemot till this point. From the very beginning, it's about the children. Moshe's going back to Egypt. Don't lose focus. It's about the children. God just told him to tell Paro it's about the children. But if you're going to be deserving to be the leader, you have to be the one invested in your children as well. And in the Mechilta's imagination, it can't be that some kind of deal was made over here. And the one who understands that exactly is Tzipora as well. And therefore, it's also, I think there's a parallel there between Rachel trying to wean her father off of idolatry and taking the Trafim, and over here, she's trying to bring her son back. And again, maybe in a certain sense, this is her conversion. When she does the Brit Milah on her son, she just now became Jewish. Again, it's a funny term to use before Matan Torah, but there's something nonetheless heroic about what she does and her understanding and her sensitivity over here and her involvement with it. But ultimately, we shouldn't be surprised, because leaving Egypt is the men and the women and the boys and the girls and the little ones and the older ones, and all of us are leaving together. And that's exactly what God told us. That's what it's all about. And when Power says, no, just the men have to go and it's not about the children, exactly, that's the values that we're leaving. That's not where we're staying. And that beautiful midrash of the Egyptian children rebelling against their parents, saying, no, this is not about you. We don't care about you. This is about keeping our slaves. And then you realize how perverse that is. What Pesach night is that night, that more than any other night, that we are invested in. It's not just the chicken soup, and it's not the matzo ball, and if you eat gebrakst, which you should, and it's not just about the food, although that's a part of it, but it's about creating a beautiful atmosphere that our children and grandchildren will understand these values that we want to give them over, and get a commitment right then that they're going to one day again say to themselves, I want to be an adult so I can teach this over to my son and to my daughter and to my children and to my grandchildren. And that's what we've been so successful at. But now you realize this is not just some kind of rabbinic imagination and all this. All of this is in the text with a little rabbinic embellishment. God willing, we'll all be able to sit together with our families and with our grandchildren and with our grandparents, and we'll sit together and we'll be able to celebrate Pesach properly, and we'll have a good 4 cups of wine. And the celebration should be one which is really one of joy, but it's not just joy, because part of the joy, it's the joy of responsibility. And we've done a very good job. God should give us the ability to do it properly as we continue and move forward. As I said, there is at least a Gemara that says that they ended up being involved in Avodah Zarah. And by the way, that could be because the Gemara's understanding is that's what happened, so where did it come from? So you're always looking for a cause. Sometimes there isn't a cause. Sometimes, you know, there's not a reason for it. A person can't always explain, you know, what the, you know, if someone's children didn't come out exactly the way they want to, or they did come out the way they want to, it doesn't mean that there was something which they did or they could have done better. I mean, we don't have to beat ourselves up about everything, but the Midrash does.